you've been listening to Freak Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Before I go, I just want to thank everyone who's given already to KBOO's Spring Drive. If you haven't given yet, you can do that now by giving to kboo.fm/give. Our members make shows like Free Culture Radio possible. Thank you for your support. A big thank you to everyone out there fighting for civil rights, human rights, and social justice. And thanks especially, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. Free Culture Radio is a volunteer production for Community Radio, syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's Audioport service. Theme music for Free Culture Radio was composed and performed by Tom Nickel and Four Dimensional Nightmare. Free Culture Radio is available as a podcast or direct download. Find links at the website kboo.fm/freeculture. Free Culture Radio is on Facebook, facebook.com/kboofreeculturradio. Please give it a like. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Hi, I'm Dr. Demento. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO is in the middle of our annual spring membership drive. It's that time of year where KBOO is all abuzz, and we need you to come jive with our radio hive. Help us reach our $56,000 goal and keep the hive alive. Just go to kboo.fm/give or mail a check to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. And thanks!
The following program is a special encore rebroadcast for these unique pandemic times. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred and are no longer relevant.
Blessings, Ashe, Salam.
Peace to Sophia Bukhari.
Albert Neve Washington.
Herman Ferguson.
Richard Mafundi Lake.
Marilyn Butt.
Kouassi Balogun.
Phil Africa.
Melvin Dixon.
Delbert Africa.
Oscar Washington.
Iafulani Suni Ali.
Luis Rodriguez.
Afeni Shakur.
Hugo Pinnell.
Mondo Wilanga.
Eddie Hatcher.
Herman Wallace.
Robert Webb.
Bashir Hamid.
Lolita LeBron.
Teddy Jahi.
Geronimo G. Jaga.
John Trudell. Fred Hampton.
From the most oppressive system in humanity's existence, disproportionate penalties, a stiffer sentence for political beliefs. They sit in prison and may never be released. From opposition, abolition is the key. We see no justice, so you know there is no peace. Systemic genocide inside the belly of the beast. What's beef? Being targeted for your beliefs. Politicians are cheats, and the captains are police.
State agencies, they hunt you down in the streets. They want you dead or locked up. If your philosophy is a product of history, strategic victory results when the culture works to achieve principles and passion, commitment to action, the greatest threat to oppression. They can't let that happen. They want to crush your dreams, destroy your hope. Peace to Suniata, Asada, and Russell Shull. Free them all, let the walls of Jericho fall. Free them all, Mutulutu, Mumia.
Free them all, free them all, free them all. That Jericho movement gon' free them all. Behind these walls, behind them walls. That Jericho movement gon' free them all.
From before this place was a country, dissenters have had to pay by getting hanged at the gallows or by getting locked away. Rise up against the empire, try to break your chains, or in any way challenge the power of those who hold the reins. Railroad people to prison with charges pinched from air, till we meet your firing squads and your electric chairs. From before the FBI was formed to the surveillance state of now, you'll know it's the revolution. I'll tell you how when we free them all.
Free them all, let the walls of Jericho fall. Free them all, Mutulutu, Mumia.
Free them all, free them all, free them all. That Jericho movement gon' free them all. Behind these walls, behind them walls. That Jericho movement gon' free them all. Justice, education, retribution, integrity. This coalition organized that has the recipe. Honoring all those who led before and next to me. From the BPP to that AIM movement. That's the type of schooling that my pop is doing. Peace to all prisoners of dictator politics. We fight to abolish it, dedicate to stopping it. Free them all is the call. The movement's Jericho. Revolution not televised, but in stereo. I heard being woke is the first call to action. I've been doing that since before I knew fractions. Mr. President, on behalf of the residents, free Mumia and Leonard Peltier. Y'all been doing this for over 500 years. Free Bill Dunn and my Udo Oso Blanco in solidarity. Survive till I go.
Free them all, let the walls of Jericho fall. Free them all, Mutulutu, Mumia.
Free them all, free them all, free them all. That Jericho movement gon' free them all. Behind these walls, behind them walls. That Jericho movement gon' free them all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Big, big, big shout out to all the listeners. Shout out to my comrades and my creative collaborators, Opium Sabah, David Rovix. That tune is called Free 'em All. It's off of the Power to the Public album called Take the Power Back, in support of the Jericho movement to free all political prisoners. You are listening to KBOO Community Radio, KBOO.FM, 90.7 on the FM dial. And this is our spring drive, 2022. We're about to raise $50,000 with your help. The type of content that you hear, news, public affairs, the music you hear, all of the programming on KBOO is produced by volunteers, normal, everyday people, artists, educators, activists, parents, community members. And KBOO is brought to you by those efforts, and it's something that costs money, and we do this with your support. So I want you to donate to KBOO, and I want you to become a member. Text KBOO to 44321. You can mail us. You can put a check in the mail or a money order in the mail to KBOO, KBOO, at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Okay? You can go to kboo.fm/give, and you can click donate in the mobile app. All right? So become a member and continue to support what we're doing. This is Culture in Motion, your once monthly show. We're doing conversations, the intersection of music, art, culture, politics, and activism. And tonight I have two very special guests talking about things that are important to them and indeed important to all of us. I've got Brian Chu, a teacher from Portland Public Schools, who is teaching at Harriet Tubman, doing some of the best educational work with our young people. that's actually happening right now. And I have Aaron NEC, a wonderful singer-songwriter, here to talk about Earth Day and a song in support of saving some of our relatives that have been around far longer than we've been around. We're going to start off the show with Annie C. Annie, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, Mike. Thanks so much for having me. It's a real honor to be here.
Thank you for coming down. Annie, you are a phenomenal singer, songwriter, producer. You play, you're a vocalist, and you also program and make the beats that you use, right?
Thank you. Yes. On this particular song, I collaborated with a local band, the Colin Trio. So they are the rhythm section and a lot of the instrumentation you hear on this latest single.
And this song is called Save Me, correct?
It's called Save Me, correct.
So tell, you know, before we get into listening to the song, can you talk more about what inspired the song and Earth Day and the intersection of those things?
Definitely. So I like to introduce this song as a song of interspecies empathy. And the genesis of this song started when I was walking home and I passed a thrift store and I saw a record of humpback whale songs. So I was pretty intrigued and I went into the store and bought the record. And as I was walking home, the line for the chorus came through, which was, "Would you save me if you understood my song?" So this idea of if we could really understand what our other relatives, our other creatures we share the planet with, if we understood what they were saying, how would we change our actions? And a couple of weeks later, I attended a documentary screening for a film called Damned to Extinction. And it's a powerful, powerful film that examines the impact of the Snake River dams on the salmon population and the orcas, southern resident orcas. And as I was sitting there watching that film, I realized that was the home for that chorus and that line. And so this song is written from the perspective of a mother orca and will be released on Earth Day
okay.
in a couple days.
That's April 22nd for those of us who need a reminder. And when people want to see, there's a video as mm-hmm. well as a single. So I got a chance to watch the video. I feel really fortunate in that. It was so beautifully shot. Mm-hmm. When people search for that video, where are they going to be able to find it?
Yes. So you can go to my website, anniecmusic.com, C like the ocean. And there's a link there in my posts. If you also go to my socials at anniecmusic, again, C like the ocean, I've been posting a lot about it. And we're going to have a video premiere at noon on Earth Day. So if you check that out, we would love to have you watch while we send it out into the world.
Right on. And Annie is spelled A-N-N-I-E.
Correct. A-N-N-I-E-S-E-A music.
So the video features the beautiful wildlife. Mm-hmm. It features the whales and the waterways. Where was that video shot at? And the footage that was in the documentary is also in the video, correct?
Correct. So, and the story of how the video came to be is very circular. So, I had a song in the documentary Damned to Extinction at the end. And as I said, I was inspired to write this song after watching that documentary. And after recording the song with the Colin Trio, I sent it to the director of Damned to Extinction thinking we could, you know, maybe they had some extra footage of orcas and salmon. And when he heard the song, he was really inspired to do a full music video. And like you said, it's just stunning. I mean, it was, it's the first music video I've been a part of for one of my songs. And the first time I saw it, it was so emotional. It's so beautiful. And I think that it brings together, you know, acknowledges the tragedy of what's happening, but also brings a lot of hope and beauty to it.
Mm-hmm.
So Michael Peterson, Heidi Zimmerman, Stephen Hawley were the team behind the video, and they really elevated the vision of the song in a big way.
Word. So something that I've been aware of, and I'm sure you have as well as Brian and a lot of folks listening, is, you know, since I was a kid, is this economic crisis this ecological crisis, all these different crises that kind of are converging and always have been, right? Mm-hmm. They're all part of the same system. But as I was, you know, paying attention to the environmental crises as a kid, it was often spoken of as if it was something that, that middle-class white people cared about, mm-hmm. but that some of the same people who wanted to save the whales weren't so concerned about the plight of marginalized human beings. Mm-hmm. And where do you see, you know, the message about saving the whales and championing the cause of environmental justice, mm-hmm. where do you see that right now in relation to other issues that impact people?
Mm, that's such a big and important question. And I think just with the idea behind that line, you know, when it just existed, that line just existed as a chorus, one thought I had was not only thinking about, you know, non-human animals, but also other groups of humans where we don't understand each other and we don't understand each other's struggles. And I think that, yeah, there's so much we could say about that. Like you said, it's all connected, and we're in this exploitative system that exploits other people, exploits other animals, and
one of the things I hear you talking about in the chorus, can you share the chorus with us again?
Sure. The chorus is, "Would you save me if you understood my song?"
Right, and I'm hearing mm-hmm. that there's empathy. That's the question.
Right.
You know, that's what you're identifying when you ask right. that question. And so I think the system that we live in is a system in which there's a vertical transfer mm-hmm. of power mm-hmm. to institutions, to people, to interests that don't display any empathy.
Right.
You know, and that if there was a more just or equitable arrangement, mm-hmm. then there could be more accountability.
Right.
And so when I think about animals, I mm-hmm. think about what if they were able to hold us accountable?
Right.
You know, and the same is true. Like when we think about oppressed peoples, mm-hmm. often the people who experience the most oppression, they actually have no desire mm-hmm. to return that level of oppression to their oppressors.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because we know animals are strong. They could tear us to pieces if they chose to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to jump in right here.
Please do, Brian.
You know, yeah. we were talking, like, just in our first conversations right when we got to the studio mm-hmm. about, you know, we're talking about the Snake River.
Mm-hmm.
And the instant connection we made was the I-5 freeway expansion.
Right.
That's affecting Harriet Tubman Middle School and the relocation
right.
of it. And you were talking about the title of your song or the chorus.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just saying, like, well, in my classroom, we always ask the question of if animals could speak, what would they say about how we treat them?
Right.
You know, and, you know, every day in my classroom, we start off with a land acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we go into this idea of this thing called In La Quech, which is a Mayan poem, right?
Mm.
It's this Mayan idea that exists in all humanity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can find it everywhere. Like, you are my other me. Kind of like Ubuntu as well, right?
Right.
I am because you are. And so then we go into a Sada's chant, and then we go into this other version of In La Quech that we wrote specifically for Harriet Tubman Middle School. And just in our conversations, like, we were already connected in that thing, and we see that thread.
Right.
And so you being an artist, me being a teacher, Mike being Mike, like, we're all in that same thread. It's a spirit.
Right.
And it exists in humanity, but since we're in the society that it is, it's been buried, and we have to excavate ourselves to find mm-hmm. ourselves, to remember that's who we actually are.
Right.
Yeah.
Man.
And where are they putting that freeway? They're putting it through communities that have already been displaced.
Environmental
and we
racism.
See that, yeah, exactly, environmental racism all over the place. So it's all, like you said, it's all a part of the same picture.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I was going to say that, you know, the school district cares more about the building than the people inside of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say again, sorry. You know, the school district, Portland Public Schools,
mm-hmm.
right, they're more concerned about the $120 million they're getting for this building
mm.
than the people inside of it,
mm-hmm.
right? And if you understand what Harriet Tubman Middle School means, you know, to Portland, Oregon, and the struggles of the Black United Front, you know, then you understand, like, environmental racism is alive and well.
Right.
And what's happening right now is gentrification 2022.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this piece about caring more about the edifice, the physical structure, mm-hmm. right? And capitalism places value on structures that outweighs the value that's placed on life itself. I remember one of the most profound examples of that I had. I was
part of the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, and we were at the Republican National Convention. I forget what year. This was earlier in the 2000s, and there was this huge counter-protest, this rally. And as we were marching, Rage Against the Machine was playing by the St. Paul State Capitol, and there was this huge march. And the state police shut down the Rage concert. But all that did was it invigorated like 5,000-10,000 people that were at that concert to then join the march. So as the march converges with all the concert goers who were just ecstatic and rageful at the same time, we look and what we saw was we saw hundreds upon hundreds of cops in their Teenage Mutant Ninja Pig like uniforms protecting these buildings. They don't even house people. You know, these buildings are, they're open during the day for the function of the institution. But when these buildings are closed at night, they don't even provide shelter for human beings. And those were the buildings that were being protected.
Profit and property over planet and people.
Yeah. All day. So, you know, looking forward, we've been told, I even see the convergence of what we're talking about with what was being talked about by the guests before us when they were talking about addiction. You know, and the pharmaceutical contamination of recreational drugs and that being behind the overdose crisis and so forth. It's like all these things are interconnected. Thinking about the war, you know, where we're talking about these munitions that are outlawed by the Geneva Convention, white phosphorus. These bunker-busting bombs, it's a war crime to use these weapons. But the question that arises is, well, who has the power to actually enforce? If it's a crime against humanity, how do we enforce it? When you talk about a bunker-busting bomb or white phosphorus, why don't you mention the company that actually manufactures that, right? So when we think about the whale, we think about people eating seafood and that the fisheries are going to be depleted to the point where there's going to be more plastic by volume in the ocean than there is actually living organisms in the ocean. And you think about type 2 diabetes being caused in children from the ingestion of the microplastics. But the question that we all know about all these problems, the question is, what can we do? When you release your video on Earth Day, is there something actionable that people can, those people who become fans of your music and people who follow you can do to support?
Yes.
What is that?
Yes, thank you so much. I just wanted to say there's so many organizations and people who've been in this fight for such a long time. One that comes to mind is Columbia Riverkeeper, and I recently got a message from them about a petition because there is a very... there's a strong possibility politicians are paying attention to this, and there is, like I said, a large movement to remove these dams because they are not as economically feasible as they once were, and there are other ways to get the power that we are getting from them. So I actually put, if you connect with me on social media, I put a link to the Columbia Riverkeeper petition in my collection of links. But if you check out Columbia Riverkeeper, Columbia Intertribal Fish Commission, Save Our Wild Salmon, wildsalmon.org, there's a lot of action steps people can take. So, absolutely.
Well, without further ado, I think we should listen to this song.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I swim with my baby resting on my head. She's another hope. Won't give up for dead. Grandma sings of days salmon danced us home. Now we glide in slender silence, searching for their bones. Would Would you save me if you understood my song? Would you save me? Would you save me if you understood my song? Would you?
Save Me by Annie C. Annie, thank you so much for reaching out and asking if we could share this with the public.
Thank you so much. It's a real honor, like I said, to be here and share it with your audience, really for the first time. And definitely be on the lookout for a video. We're also playing a release show this Saturday at Alberta Street Pub, 4 to 6 p.m. It's going to be a really, really powerful and fun time. So thanks so much for having me, Mike.
Right on, Annie C. And then one more time, for the people who want to find you online, where can they do that?
Yes, anniecmusic.com, C like the ocean, A-N-N-I-E-S-E-A, music.com, on all the socials at Annie C. Music.
Good evening again. Good afternoon if you're somewhere across the world listening to KBOO.FM. It's our spring drive, y'all, Hive Drive, and we are here to raise $56,000 between April 15th and May 28th. So what you're going to do is you're going to go to KBOO.FM/give, click donate in the mobile app, or you're going to text KBOO to 44321, or you're even going to put some of that paper money in the form of a check or a money order. Don't mail cash, but put some of that other kind of paper money in the mail to KBOO, KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Become a member. Help support this kind of programming. If you like what you heard from Annie C., if you like what Annie C., Brian Chu, and myself are talking about on Culture in Motion, then you should become a member of KBOO, and you should help support keeping this kind of programming on the air. Thank you to all our members and our listeners. Brian Chu, good to see you, bro.
Good to see you too, man.
So you are not a stranger to controversy. I think backwards reactionary elements are not a stranger to you and the work you do. What's going on with you right now and Harriet Tubman?
Well, there's some things I can't talk about, but you know, I'm on paid administrative leave.
Okay.
And, you know, if you read the papers, you see the allegations against me. And, you know, we'll let them sit there. You know, I think that my actions and my students at the school, I think that that speaks loud enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
So some of these young people have organized actions, and I was moved to tears by some of the video I saw of them on the local news talking about how important you are, how important the work you do is. And I think what's apparent is that it's bigger than you.
Absolutely. This moment right here is not about me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is, but it's not. But it's so much bigger. You know, like, we're definitely in a moment where things are shifting.
Right.
And it can go one way or the other, right? Like, do we move forward or do we regress? And I think that right now there's forces that are pulling us backwards, completely backwards. And so, you know, this, we talked about it earlier, right? Like, there's this thing that's been acting upon us. And, you know, if you're a teacher, right, you got to understand that you're a warden of the state, you know, and if you understand that role, then what are you doing to actively not do, quote unquote, your job, right? And so, because your job is to teach, not a subject, but you're teaching children.
Okay.
And so right now what I'm seeing is like a living assessment of my work. You know, I've been teaching for 24 years. And so when I see the students doing what they're doing, like, they got me, you know, and that's my force field. And I just want to give a shout out to, like, that's that love right there. Like, that's the thing that we were talking about. Earlier you talked about, you know, there's a addiction problem in hip-hop.
Right.
You know, and the addiction thing is to be numb.
Come on.
You know? And so, like, if you're an educator, you have to understand your job is to make people, like excavate their humanity, you know, because we cannot be apathetic and we cannot be indifferent. You know, we are human. So the oppressors, they've lost their humanity. And the one thing that the people that are oppressed have is our humanity is still intact,
yeah.
Right? So what I'm seeing right now with these young people, and they're the leaders. They got it. The adults, we got all these other issues, but for them, it's razor sharp, crystal clear. They understand why they're there, and it comes from a place of love, radical love, and indignation to injustices, and they see it so clearly, right? And this is funny because at the end of the day, these adults that sit in these high positions are blind to it.
We get that's the game. We, for those of us who are educated, so to speak, right? We get good grades. We keep that GPA up. We go in debt, getting that higher education. We get our position in the system. And then it's about maintaining, stabilizing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas young people, if they have not been so completely numbed and traumatized by the medication, and everything else, right? All the distractions, they're the ones who are still engaged enough to want a future that's worth living.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I would, it's scary being a young person, I think, right now in this day and age.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, the things we just went through in the last 2 years, for example, you know, like, what kind of future can you perceive, that you can imagine?
Well,
you know,
we're being shown more than sometimes I feel like I have the capacity to process, right? Because the intervals between tragic occurrences are getting smaller and smaller. We lose so many people over the course of a week,
mm-hmm.
from overdose, from violence, and from suicide that we become desensitized. Sometimes I can't even I'll think of somebody and I can't even recall the fact that, oh, they already passed.
Yeah,
because I haven't had an opportunity to mourn and reconcile the magnitude and the frequency of the death.
Absolutely.
And yeah.
So I was going to go back to Annie's song. You know, I mean, the chorus was, could you say the chorus one more time?
Would you save me if you understood my song?
I think people understand the song. Mm. And I think that there's almost like, you know, because people want to do right. And they want to do good. And they know what's right and wrong. They understand the song, you know. But there's,
it's kind of hard and tangible to put something, like, if you could just put, like, $5,000 into this thing and it would change this thing, like money's not going to save us, you know? And that's the thing right there, right? Like, you know, it's weird, like, because people would want to donate. They would, and it's not about that. It's about being engaged with each other, like, coming into this space right now that we're in. Like, you know, this is where it's at. Our humanity is still intact. Our humanity gets validated when we're in, when we're in a shared space. And by the way, that is my classroom, you know, and my students, once again, because they've been fostered in that that loving, caring, radical space, right? It's a fugitive space. Actually, in education, they would call that a fugitive space, right?
Right, right.
And we talk about this idea of fugitivity, right? And so in education, they keep talking about these ideas of, like, well, you know, you have to be these, I'm like, you got to be a fugitive in the space, right? And it's funny because if you do that, then all the words that this district says they stand for, like environmental justice, you know, racial equity, social justice, if they're saying those things, right, that's how you get there. So they have the words on paper, they have the acronyms, but they don't know how to enact that, right?
To be a fugitive is to be an outlaw. To be an outlaw is to understand that your existence has been criminalized. To be self-determined is to understand that it's not up to the institution to give you validation for your existence. So, you know, I just want to applaud the work that you're doing that helps young people embody this spirit.
And it's interesting because I think I always tell my students, I'm learning way more from y'all than you are from me.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, we didn't go into education to become rich. Right. And anybody, and by the way, there's a lot of people in Portland public schools that got into education to become rich.
Well, there's some of these higher positions. I heard recently that somebody got a $75,000 bonus. I don't know if they got it or if that's still on
the
table.
That would be the superintendent, Guadalupe Guerrero.
Okay, so the $75,000.
He didn't get it, though, by the way.
He didn't get it because people protested?
No. It's based upon data, right?
Yeah.
So in order for him to get it, there has to be a 3% increase in these racist standardized tests that are going around, right? The SBAC, which is now called the OSAS, right? Like, you know, these, once again, I'm telling you, the assessment are the students right there in front of the district office. It ain't a number or percentage or pie graph.
Well, so, you know, we understand, we've been hearing information over the years that talks about different rubrics and data and schematics and charts and statistics and what they've been talking about in as far as the school to prison pipeline that keeps these beds full in these so-called correctional institutions in the prison industrial complex is test scores, and that they can predict the outcomes based on the test scores. But the thing is, the standardized tests are not a human experience.
Nope.
They're not based in an organic experience.
Right. And it's interesting because the word assessment, if you get to the root of it, it means to sit with. Kind of like what we're doing right now. We're sitting with each other. That's the assessment. It ain't a kid sitting in front of a computer clicking on a button, generating a number that you're never going to see. These numbers help nobody except, well, sorry, let me rewind. Yeah. It doesn't help anybody that's trying to do the right thing for children, right?
It helps people who are oriented to property, ownership, consolidation of wealth and profit based on structures that have nothing to do with organic life. To the extent that they have to do with living beings, it has to do with systematizing and organizing and quantifying and arranging living beings in a means that's meant for social control,
right,
to extract profit, wealth, and resources.
Absolutely.
from the human experience, correct?
Yep, correct. You know, it's interesting, and we're in 2022, and there's this idea of, this word gets thrown around, and anybody who uses it, and when they're speaking about education, they talk about this achievement gap. Now, the achievement gap is a man-made gap.
Right.
So if you use racist standardized assessments, right, where it shows that Asians and whites go higher and Latinos and blacks go lower, right? And by the way, this data has been the same thing. This has been the conversation for the last, like, 15 years, you know? And it's interesting that you still hear people talking about it in 2022, like the achievement gap. I'm like, you didn't do your homework.
So the achievement gap is something, I was actually recently awarded a grant. Shout out to OCF and the Fields Fellowship. You know, as an artist, one of the things that I applied for, of hundreds of people, I was awarded the grant because I had to speak to my work around the achievement gap, right? And so looking at this gap, what is the achievement gap? Well, people, marginalized people, people of color, okay, alternately abled people, poor people, lower income people, people from single family households, single parent families, single parent households and so forth, houseless people, people experiencing mental illness, addiction, and all this, these range of factors are the most disproportionately impacted by all our systems. And so they don't achieve. So then when we look at the term achievement, what, well, let's define that. Let's interrogate. What do you mean when you say achievement? Do you mean people who know how to sit still, shut up, follow rules?
Careful, you might want to say that. You might get put on leave.
Right. Do, and help your system operate? To help increase profit, to help further extraction? Is that what achievement is? Because that's what I think we're talking about when we say achievement. But when we look at what you're talking about in your song, Would You Save Me, that kind of achievement is leading us to our demise quicker than we can actually acknowledge.
Or you know, like for example, like if like Annie's song, right? How would you quantify that song? Why would you want to quantify that song?
Well, how many units is that going to sell?
Right. How many retweets? How many likes do you get? Right. No, I mean, like,
awesome
word.
We were just informed by Tammy, our board op. Thank you for doing what you're doing, Tammy. We have some callers, so why don't we take the first caller? Hey, Susie, what's good?
Hey, we're here.
Right on. Thank you for showing up. We what appreciate up, you. You got a question?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you guys so much for everything you're both doing. You know, you're both admired in our home, and Pedro's here too.
What up, Pedro?
Hello.
One thing I wanted to say is just a little positive word. We as a collective are divinely protected. And after saying that, I do want to ask the question if Brian or you, both of you, could speak a little bit more about the patterns of oppression and denial in PPS, especially in the higher, in the office. What are those patterns of oppression? Thank you.
Thank you, Susie.
Since the beginning of education, it's always been steeped in white supremacy.
Mm.
Right. I'm gonna flash forward into Portland Public Schools, you know, Carol Smith era. I forgot what the year was, but what they found out was that Black boys were being over-identified in special ed, and this district actually got caught, and they got caught. You know, I forgot there was some kind of study that was done, and they found that this was a thing, and they got kind of like called out for it. Mm-hmm. And so, in order to remedy the situation, they brought in this thing called courageous conversations about race.
Right, right.
And this protocol, right, which was a district mandate, required teachers to have conversations about race. Right now, if you think about the racial makeup of this district, right, we understand that once again, it's a hyper racialized white space,
mm-hmm.
white supremacy and whiteness in the center. So imagine at a staff meeting where you have an equity team that's formed, right, with people of color, right, up there presenting these professional developments about like excavating race and racism, white supremacy, in a hyper racialized white space.
Right,
right. It's going to cause a lot of discomfort. And by the way, one of their agreements is to experience discomfort.
Right.
Now we know what happens when white people experience discomfort. Now imagine if there's an administrator and a staff of mostly like white folks, right? And they're feeling uncomfortable, and they understand the source of that that discomfort is coming from a person of color up front in a position of power speaking about the thing that they have no idea about, right? Well, they're going to feel discomfort, and in order to actually not feel discomfort and feel comfortable again, they have to get rid of the thing that's causing them that discomfort. And so enters in the past 10 years of my life. There you go.
Yeah, this question of patterns, you know, I like the pattern terminology, because what we're dealing with is we're dealing with intentional vibrations that are created, that create forms of energy that are sometimes abstract, and the energy causes harm and it causes violence. The consciousness around the energy causes the harm and the violence, and once the energy is self-aware and is operating and being channeled by individuals, its primary directive is to sustain itself. And one of the ways that it does that is to deny its existence. And so the fragility of white supremacy operating in individuals and in systems is such that when it's called out, when it's identified, then the first thing that it does is it denies that it exists. The second thing that it does is it acts like a victim. In concert with acting like a victim, it dehumanizes those who have called it out, and then it escalates its level of violence. So when we see public education as a means of social control, and we look at the intersections, we talk about patterns between taking, let's take black boys, for instance, in terms of the receiving end, catching the brunt of the oppression that's systematized in the public education system, black girls, okay? And now we start to see this attack on people's sexual orientation and gender identification, okay, going across the country. So you're talking about aspects of people's identity that people can't control. This is who people actually are, right? And so when people don't behave the way the system would benefit most from them behaving, so this is what I started to see when I was working in behavioral classrooms, right? Yeah. Prescribe them medicine. Give them medicine that makes them sit still. If they don't take their medicine and act right, then we're going to develop a trail of paperwork where we can track their behavioral misconduct, their incorrigibility, their obstinance, right? And so then the police start to come into the school after a certain amount of referrals have been written. Mm-hmm. If these kids, and so what I started to see was some of these young people refused to take their first form of resistance was to refuse to take the meds that they were prescribed. These are not adults; these are minors. And I'm supposed to go get this powerful prescribed medicine to shut them down so they can be managed more easily. So let's fast forward. This is in the late 90s into the 2000s, and we have an opioid crisis right now. So how does that correlate with these children learning about their own bodies and their relationship to power? How does that correlate into what people are being taught about? If you can't make yourself act right, well, there's this pill, right? And if you just do this, at least you can get through the day. So when we have large systems and bureaucracies that are in control of education, when you talk about patterns, you talk about standardized test scores, talk about buildings being more important than the bodies that occupy the desks and the seats in the classrooms that are walking through the hallways, what are we actually talking about? Yes, let's take another caller. Scrutch, homie, my cousin.
Yo,
what up, Scrutch?
What's up, y'all?
What's up,
man? I'm listening to this conversation right now. I've been listening for the past half hour, so I just got off the trail, came right into the phone call, and you know, I thank you, Mike, for holding space. Thank you, Chu, as both you as comrades for the activism, you know, and what we're talking about here is radical dharma, right? This is radical dharma. This is liberating ourselves and liberating our spirit in this activism against the oppression and against the system. And, you know, PPS is the system. PPS. As well as all institutions in the United States, connected to capitalism. And if you are directly connected to capitalism, there's no way you can be an educator. So you have people like Chu working in the trenches, doing the real work, the real learning, connecting students with the earth, with the injustice that has incurred since colonial settlerism. And then you have people on the other side that aren't working for quality, but people such as Guadalupe that are working for quantity, right? And so what happens also on the side of education is what I'm noticing is that brown and black bodied humans and other indigenous peoples that are hired with this district, it's just a box check. That is it. And we are placed in spaces that they know will be under-resourced, communities that are under-resourced, communities that have been traditionally displaced in Portland, right? And then the impact that we are supposed to have is mighty, but we have no tools to be mighty. We have no tools to be mighty, and we're supposed to be working in a system of numbers, right? And I think what happens is when someone speaks up, when you speak up for the real justice and liberation of people, that can't happen. You must be oppressed. You must be removed, right? And what is happening now is that it is your time. It is our time. And the type of education that you've been facilitating since your time in the district, Mike, that you've been facilitating since the time I've seen you in classrooms and had you in classrooms, right? Now we have the youth listening. And once you have the ears of the youth, and I always say this to my students, once you have the ears of the youth and the youth have the ears of the community, there is no stopping it. So what we have to do is continue this act of radical dharma and this act of liberation, because we were never supposed to be connected to our spirit and be connected with the land. But now that we are approaching in this manner and it's broadening, and we have youth stepping in and lobbying and fighting ODOT and fighting the capitalistic white supremacist machine itself, now we're gaining the attention of people. You will see more educators removed, especially educators who are brown and black, educators who are indigenous, educators who make the majority of other educators, which are white-bodied humans, experience discomfort. Because that's what we're talking about in all the schools in the entire country. No one wants to experience discomfort. No one wants to remember the past, right? The abduction of flesh, the planter-based system. All of this is stolen from that, right? So, you know, listening to you all, I'm just so moved. And like you said earlier, Mike, I was so moved by the students stepping up and walking out for truth, justice for truth. Right? And in my home space, I was thinking the exact same thing. In this point in time, I'm willing to do anything possible, including losing my job to support Brian Chu coming back with no punishment. Bring him back to the classroom. I've talked to many parents out on soccer fields and other people in the community who are so supportive of you, Chu, who understand that all the students are so supportive of you, who understand that you would never speak to a student like that, right? I've never ever even heard you raise your voice at a student. So the problem here is not Mr. Chu talking to students in an oppressive manner. The problem is Mr. Chu speaking truths against the capitalist machine, against the complex, right? So I definitely wanted to jump on and just say that for a moment. So thank you for holding space.
Thank you, Scratch.
Hey, Scratch, thank you for humanizing me in this space.
That's what's up, brother. Thank you. We have one more caller, and let's take that last caller.
Hello, hello.
Hey, who are we talking to?
This is Piam from Orange County, friend of Brian Chu's from 28 years ago.
What up, Pi?
Here's the importance. I'll make it quick because you guys are running out of time. Here's the importance of Brian Chu on a metaphysical basis. Here's the importance of what's going on up there as we are watching from hours away. Money dictates fear in human beings more potently and more heavily than anything else on earth, up to and including the threat of death itself. That's why people would prefer to be dead than homeless and completely barren and poverty stricken, many people. It's because they're conditioned with that fear that money injects. Brian Chu, not just with regard to one lesson or one textbook, but his entire essence is a metaphysical revolt against that conditioning, which he and I and our generation have witnessed up front for at least 40 years. Of implementation. And that trite suburbanized city council, which is essentially Americana, or that school council, they need to realize that unless education on a very deep philosophical level is able to teach the eradication of fear with regard to material issues, then they are as trite as all the movies that have depicted them over the decades, whether it's Orange County from 20 years ago, whether it's The Breakfast Club. Everything pop culture has lambasted compulsory schooling about is an understatement unless they realize the value of that educator that they have there in Mr. Chu.
Thank you for calling in.
Thanks, Pai.
Thank you.
Chu, how can people support you getting back into the classroom?
You know, like I said, it's about the students right now.
Okay.
And once again, I'm just sending my love to them. And if you love me, support them.
Okay, and how can people support these students?
Get in touch with them and ask them.
Okay, pay attention to social media. Justice for Chu. Pay attention to what's happening. Go down to the school board meeting on Tuesdays and let your voice be heard. Annie C., once again, where can the people find your music?
Yes, at anniecmusic.com. Annie C., like the ocean. And on the socials at Annie C. Music. Thanks so much.
You are listening to Culture in Motion, your once monthly show, intersection between art, culture, music, politics, and activism. I'm your host, Mike Crenshaw. Thank you for listening. This is the Spring Drive, the Hive Drive. Between April 15th and May 28th, our on-air goal is $56,000. We hope you enjoy what you're hearing. I urge you to support it. So go to kboo.fm/give. Click donate in the mobile app. Text KBOO to 44321. Mail us some money. Give us some cheese, y'all. We're at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Why don't we go out with Free 'Em All one more time and segue to our next show. And I want y'all to know that Dave Rovix, myself, and Opium Sabah are going to be playing live with Talilo Marfil, Suego Mandela, and Libretto June 4th at the Star Theater for the record release. Thank you for tuning in to Culture in Motion. Peace.
Blessings. Ashe. Salam.
Peace to Sophia Bukhari,
Albert Nev Washington,
Herman Ferguson,
Richard Mafundi Lake,
Marilyn Buck,
Kuwasi Balagun,
Phil Africa,
Melvin Dixon,
Delbert Africa,
Oscar Washington,
Iafulani Suni Ali,
Luis Rodriguez,
Afeni Shakur,
Hugo Pinnell,
Mondo Wilanga,
Eddie Hatcher,
Herman Wallace,
Robert Webb,
Bashir Hamid,
Lolita LeBron,
Teddy Jahi,
Geronimo G. Jaga,
John Trudell, Fred Hampton.
From the most oppressive system in humanity's existence, disproportionate penalties, a stiffer sentence for political beliefs. They sit in prison and may never be released. From opposition, abolition is the key. We see no justice, so you know there is no peace. Systemic genocide inside the belly of the beast. What's beef being targeted for your beliefs? Politicians and chiefs, and the captains of police. State agencies, they hunt you down in the streets. They want you dead or locked up if your philosophy is a product of history. Strategic victory results when the culture works to achieve principles and passion. Commitment to action, the greatest threat to oppression. They can't let that happen. They want to crush your dreams, destroy your hope. Peace to Suniata, Asada, and Russell Schultz. Free them all, let the walls of Jericho fall.